Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hopp, and this is part two of our discussion with James Maskell, who is the impresario who's spearheading a very exciting event this fall. You'll want to be part of it. It's free. It's going to be massive amounts of information. If you're a follower of Intelligent Medicine, consider this Intelligent Medicine to the nth degree with a selection of numerous outstanding healthcare practitioners who you can hear and watch via the Evolution of Medicine Summit. Check out the link on my homepage at drhopman.com for more information and a way to sign up. So, James, welcome back. James, one of the things that you tantalized us with in part one is a discussion that's going to be a component of the Evolution of Medicine is the revolution in self-monitoring and self-care that is going to be facilitated by extraordinary technological developments that are going to be rolled out this year, next year, and subsequent years by, number one, Google and by Apple. They're both racing to provide us with apps that are going to tell us all manner of things about our health. Can you give us a preview of that?
Yeah, absolutely. In the summit, we have two people who are really on top of this, Dr. Robin Berzin and Stephanie Telenius, who actually works for one of the biggest venture capital companies in Silicon Valley that are looking at exactly this. But essentially, everyone, in the same way that Apple changed phones and pictures really with the iPhone, feel like the iWatch and some of the other tools that are coming out from those other companies, it's going to make health in the same way that everyone's become a photographer in the last few years, everyone is going to be interested in the upstream causative factors of their health, blood sugar, heart rate variability, heart rate, whatever it is that they're going to be able to measure. And it's really exciting to see. But, that's just one of the things. Wearables is really what I'm talking about, where essentially you can wear a piece of technology that is giving you data and feedback as to your, habits, whether it be sleep, whether it be your exercise habits, whether it be your food. And, then there are lots of different companies that are sort of gamifying it to encourage people to participate. I really feel like, what's happening is Silicon Valley and integrative medicine have the same goal, which is essentially to turn consumers into the CEOs of their own health, to take responsibility primarily for their health, and then to seek, the resources of a doctor, functional medicine, holistic medicine, or otherwise, to be able to support them. So I think this is really exciting. There's a lot of things that are happening in Silicon Valley right now, but the biggest thing and the biggest money is going to companies that are either creating wearables, actually creating the hardware, or creating the technology that sits on top of the hardware. So you see, what are the biggest companies, in tech space right now, like Instagram and Snapchat? These are apps that are built on top of the iPhone structure. And in the same way, you've seen that a couple of companies have actually pulled out of creating hardware because they realized that, Apple is amazing at hardware and they probably can't beat Apple at making great hardware. But what they can do is focus on creating the best apps for the iWatch so that people are then using those apps to be able to get combinations of upstream factors delivered to them all the time. Mm-hmm. And in that way, it's really exciting because you probably know, someone comes in to get their blood pressure, and maybe their blood pressure is high because they hate going to the doctor.
That's a perfect example. That's a great example.
Bad reading. Yeah. Whereas if you are monitoring your blood pressure every day of the year, or every month, moment of the day, you're going to get much more of an objective viewpoint of what's going on with this person's blood pressure.
Exactly. And I think, some of the other exciting applications, I've heard that you will be able to monitor, you'll be able to perform an EKG on yourself. You'll be able to even monitor your levels of stress with some sort of adaptive piece of hardware that will click onto your iWatch or your wearable device, and where you can take a drop of saliva and actually determine, are you stressed at a given time, and monitor your stress responses. These are among the exciting things you could do. When we're talking to people about sleep, we say, well, how do you sleep? Do you sleep well? Do you sleep poorly? Now, instead of checking into a sleep lab with a very artificial setup where, of course, you're not going to sleep well, bright lights and machines and an uncomfortable, unfamiliar bed, you'll be able to take these devices devices home, and you'll be able to monitor your sleep. So how deep are you sleeping? Are you suffering from breathing pauses or sleep apnea? There's a whole realm of exciting tests out there. And what they're going to do, you know, it's a little bit like the first iPhone. You know, if you've got the first iPhone, they say, okay, this is an interesting thing. It's a phone and it's got apps. Well, first they had, you know, a couple of hundred. But then it was a platform for developers to come up with innovative new ways to utilize this tool. It was like a brain, but it hadn't been programmed. And now with the advent of these tools, developers are just going to really roll it up in terms of all kinds of exciting new applications.
How exciting is it to have literally like hundreds of thousands of people all concerned about how to get people to be healthier? Like, that's really what's going to happen, is that all of these new people who didn't care about health before, you know, are going to be engaged with the job of how to get us all healthy. You know, Silicon Valley is looking at medicine and saying, this is the most bloated. You know, the entrepreneurs love looking at for bloated industries where there's loads, you know, too much cost, or they can be that much more efficient and come in and just disrupt.
Disruption is the word. They want to break the paradigm and create a whole new model for self-care.
And that's, I mean, medicine is the biggest industry and the most, you know, if a third of medical expenditure in America, $800 billion a year, is waste, everyone's eyeing this up and say, I can get my chunk of that and I can help to reduce costs like that. Mm-hmm. And that is super exciting because it means that everyone's on board.
Well, what do you say, though, to the Luddites, the naysayers who say, look, I don't want to know from all this data. You know, I kind of walk around in a state of relative complacency and I feel okay. And do I need to be bombarded constantly with streams of data about every bodily function? Could this not foster a form of collective obsessive compulsive disorder where people are monitoring their bodies like pilots in a 747?
I mean, it certainly has that potential. You know, I agree. I mean, I think that might be a problem, but it's the same with everything. You know, I think the overall value is going to be high, and you know, people will be able to choose how to interact with it. You can choose whether or not to update your Instagram every 5 minutes right now. Some people do, some people don't. Some people love it. Some people are obsessive compulsive with their Instagram. Some people, it's just a healthy way of being able to share their life with others that they care about and build their personal brand. So, you know, I think there's free choice. There's no one going to force this on anyone. But I think that, you know, there's at least a chance. I'm 33 right now, Ron, and there's at least a chance that by the time I'm 50, and you know, the kind of chronic degenerative diseases that are growing exponentially, Alzheimer's and those types of things, you know, there's at least a chance that I'm going to have to pay for that in 17 years. And so if I can reduce, you know, if I can lengthen my life,
you may have to pay for my generation. That's the scary part. Yeah. You and your prime earning years may have to be paying for, octogenarians and nonagenarians who can live virtually forever due to medical advances, but are living poor quality lives that are expenses sustained because they're on 14 different drugs.
Exactly. So I would just say that, different people will uptake it at different speeds, but I think overall it's a really good thing to happen. And for the naysayers, they don't have to engage with it, but I think that people will find an app that works for them. There'll be millions, and they'll find, oh, this is kind of fun. I like knowing X. And, you know, they'll just engage with it to that level. There will be obsessive compulsiveness about it. There'll certainly be maybe a next level of hypochondria. But I think that's part of the evolution, just to see what works and what doesn't and spread the best practices.
One of the areas that you're very much concerned with, one of your favorite areas that you've investigated and researched and discussed, is the microbiome. And, you know, certainly many of the practitioners who you've interviewed speak to the issue of gut ecology, intestinal health, as being at the foundation of wellness. Who has weighed in, and what are some of the consensus ideas about the microbiome that emerged in the summit?
Well, you know, the sort of the core, everyone has really looked at the biome, because the thing about the biome is that it affects all geography of the body. You know, in our interview, Doc, you were doing the evolution of gastroenterology. And the truth is about gastroenterology is it can't be viewed by itself. It affects everything else, right? And so, you know, so the consensus from most people is just sort of like the consensus of what's coming out in the news right now, that, you know, you need to develop a strong, robust microbiome. You need to avoid, you know, things that are going to destroy your microbiome, like antibiotics and triclosan and antibacterial soaps and so forth. So, you know, there's a pretty solid group, and everyone's pretty much in agreement by that. However, there is one doctor who I think is taking it to the next level, and that's Dr. Larry Pilevsky. And I remember you and I were sitting next to each other when he lectured at the Functional Forum, and he is really bringing out, he's a pediatrician, and he's going a step further. I asked him, because he knew about the microbiome, he was lecturing it about 4 or 5 years ago before the science had really come out. So I asked him in the interview, I said, you know, what's going to be next? What's going to be interesting with the microbiome? What are we going to learn next that we don't learn now that's going to be the next level of understanding of the microbiome? And his understanding of it is that essentially, if we have trillions and trillions of bacteria, non-redundant bacteria in our genetic code, the idea that, you know, viruses coming from the outside are what make us sick maybe isn't right, because we have all of these viruses inside of us. And his view is that when the body gets to a point, and particularly in pediatrics, when the body gets to a point where the desire or the need to move toxins and waste out of the body is higher than the body's ability to perform that, the body then works with those germs and actually kicks in the self-healing mechanism, and the germs and the body are actually working together to return the body to homeostasis. And that makes a lot of sense to me. I think he's a, you know, smart guy, and he communicates it very well and says it through. But, you know, I think it's likely that there is a more in-depth relationship that we have with our microbes that goes just beyond our primary understanding of them now through the microbiome project, which is, oh yeah, 99% of them are good for us and they help us with, you know, digestion, immunity, and metabolism. The next level might be that actually the body intelligently works with these microbes to, in some cases, initiate quote unquote a viral illness with the goal of getting people to slow down, getting them into bed where they can rest, to de-stress, to, you know, to actually force them to take a break and to get the body back to a point where it can return to homeostasis. I think that's really fascinating, and that's why I had to have him on the summit to communicate about that, because I think that if nothing else, it'll trigger hopefully a lot of physicians and other practitioners to think about the microbiome in a completely different way.
Well, it's a new definition of wellness, because for some people, wellness means the absence of disease and being invulnerable. And for people who are deep thinkers about this, we recognize that illness may be part of the body's effort to achieve homeostasis when subject to unnatural stresses. And it's actually, that's a great message coming from a pediatrician, because all too often we see little perturbations in kids' health, and we bombard kids with treatments, antibiotics, and so on to alleviate conditions, which may be part of the developmental process, part of programming their immune systems and their metabolism for meeting the stresses of life.
Exactly. And, you know, I think a certain amount of humility about what we know. You know, I think that, you know, the fact is that up until 3 years ago, we thought most bacteria were bad, you know, and now we're realizing that they're not. And so just a little bit of humility that we don't know really what's going on. And it seems like operating within these parameters is the best way for us to maintain health. And, you know, I think the jury is still out on a lot of these questions, but we need to start to have this conversation, because one thing is for sure, our current strategy of dealing with germs is definitely not working. The deputy director of the CDC has said, you know, we're moving towards the end of the era of antibiotics. And so we do need some new strategies. And I have a feeling that some of those strategies will come from the previously maligned alternative medicine sphere.
Indeed, some of these ancient, what have been relegated to superstition and folklore, may come back to the fore as mainstream ideas. The notion of beneficial bacteria in the intestine, going back to Eli Metchnikoff, won the Nobel Prize in 1903, may come full circle in the 21st century. And new ideas about naturopathic medicine, which were once thought, this is primitive, this is superstitious, they may actually come to be the predominant model.
Exactly.
What about another area that I think is really exploding is genetic testing. And genetic testing, of course, there's pro and con on genetic testing. You know, we're concerned that, you know, our genes may be promulgated to employers and to governmental agencies, and this may be a breach of our confidentiality. So we have to be very careful with genetic testing. But do we see genetic testing playing a role in, say, determining what diet might be best for us, or what diseases to work on preventing, or what supplements might we begin taking because of genetic vulnerabilities?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the part of the evolution of medicine is a movement from the kind of, if you look at just the evidence base of medicine, you know, what we've looked for up until this point has been like the one intervention that helps the most, the middle of the bell curve of society, the most with a particular, you know, particular symptom. So, you know, you administer a drug, and if it helps the most people with that symptom,
180-pound male, age, yeah, you know, 35, you know, it works, but, you know, may not work for a high percentage of other people.
So, you know, I think that part of this evolution of medicine is a movement towards what's going to work best for every individual. And I think with the data, with that data matched with epigenetic data and the sort of upstream medicine that you're going to be able to get from, you know, data that you're going to be able to get from wearable, you know, I think somewhere in that bandwidth is where we'll find a much more effective system for being able to do that. But, you know, again, Ron, you have to look at it and say, if we look at the blue zones, you know, in the blue zones, which are these places in the world where people are living to 100 and being really healthy, they're not wearing eye watches. You know, they're not getting their genetic data. You know, they're living stress-free, community-based, interdependent lives. They have a lot of joy in their lives. They don't live in excess and so forth. So I think we need to temper all of this exciting future with, like, okay, well, we need to really get back to basics as well, because there are, you know, David Katz is on the summit, and he's by no means functional medicine. This is a preventative medicine guru, very well respected. Yeah, and he's saying, look, that one of the frustrating things is all of this is exciting, but we actually already know how to avoid and reduce chronic disease. It's not a guess. It's not a game. Like, we have the data. It's just a case of people doing it. And so, you know, that's one of the things that I'd like to have in the summit, balance out some of this exciting new microbiome technology, whatever, is to say, look, we already know, here are the six things that you can be doing to, you know, reduce the opportunity of you getting chronic disease significantly. And I think it's going to be balancing that information, the ancient wisdom, with the new technology. And then part of it that we're bringing in is this best business practices, because I know one thing that we agree on, Ron, is that it's much better for everyone if part of this evolution and revolution of medicine is in the hands of physicians who actually do it themselves, and we're not waiting for this sort of top-down solution. You know, I think that if people like Jeff Glad are building these, you know, these practices, community wellness-orientated practices, serving all socioeconomic groups and doing it effectively, if they're able to do that and people can drive these practices themselves and doctors can do that independently and actually deliver value directly to patients, we don't have to wait for government to catch up. We don't have to be at their whim of whatever they decide is the best. We can actually mold this in our own image and to be able to create something that we really want. And I think that if we can combine the ancient wisdom, the new technology, and the best business practices, that is a vision for a network of remarkable practices that looks very much like the the farmers market revolution that we've seen in food. We see the same thing in medicine, and suddenly we have a real healthcare system that is delivering amazing, remarkable care to everyone, and and solving this problem locally rather than, you know, decentralizing the power structure.
Well, that's very well said, and I think that paragraph or so really epitomizes what the Evolution of Medicine Summit is going to be all about. So let's give our listeners once again the details. The timing of this is what? When is this going to transpire?
September 8th through 15th, 2015.
Okay, no, great 14th. Great way to start, you know, to jumpstart your fall resolve after the summer doldrums are over, because it'll be Labor Day and it's time to get down to basics and get serious about our health after those lazy, lackadaisical days of summer. So it's a great time to do this. And the sign-up period is, can people sign up immediately?
Yeah. Okay. Sign up now, and if they sign up now, they get access to a lot of the pre-summit material. So they can, if they sign up today, they will actually be able to sort of roll all the way into the summit, listen to a couple of talks, get an idea for the quality and the thought process that these doctors are understanding. And then once the summit hits on the 8th, they can give it their undivided attention.
And the cost of this is what, $800,
$1,200? No, it's completely free, Ron.
Okay. I was just having you on. Okay, so, yep, but it's important to sign up early and participate, because while these presentations will be available, there will be a limited time when they'll be available during that week. And if you want to, I mean, if you sign up late, then there may be a fee associated with that. So this, the free is important. Timing will be important to access the free material, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, and one last thing I would say, Ron, is I'll be saying this crucially, is that there are two groups that this summit is for. There's the patients that are sick and they need to see the doctors, and there's the doctors that want to deliver this kind of medicine. But there's this third group that I'm really excited about working with and identifying and moving forward, and that's people who are well, who have been ahead of the curve on this wellness evolution and have kept themselves well, and they in a job that they hate, and they want to actually be part of this industry. They really want to play their part in the evolution of medicine. And for those people, I think that there is a real opportunity. They're still in the early adopter phase. There's opportunities as naturopaths, as health coaches, as salespeople. You know, in my role as a salesperson before, I started on commission-only sales at scratch, at zero. And that's hopefully one of the stories that I hope will be inspiring to this next generation of people to say, let's get involved. Let's play our part in it. And I think if everyone can get involved in it, what we'll see is that, you know, we'll see a decentralization of power. We'll see real community activism, and we'll see a new model of healthcare that hopefully will spread to other countries that have the same problem.
Well, absolutely. Let's make this viral. There's nothing more exciting for me than to talk to people and hear from people who I've inspired to get involved in some aspect of the healthcare industry as advocates for health, and not just cogs in a big pharmaceutical medical machine. And really trying to spearhead this grassroots revolution in health. So I will thoroughly endorse this. I'm very happy to share this with my Intelligent Medicine listeners, because they're hungry for content, and this is content which is going to be extraordinarily valuable. If you listen to Intelligent Medicine podcasts, this is a very, very worthwhile extension of the information that we provide to you on Intelligent Medicine. So I am wholeheartedly behind this effort, and I thank you also for including it. And I thank you and commend you for your energy, the fire in the belly that you bring to this, because it was scarcely possible for me to envision when I began my career 30-some years ago in this field that people like you would take up the torch. We'd pass the torch to you to bring a lot of excellent healthcare professionals to the fore for our public.
Well, thanks very much, Ron. And one thing I would, just last thing I would say is, I know a lot of your listeners are from New York because you've been on the radio for a long time here. We do have a launch event on the evening of September 8th at ABC Home and Carpet in New York. So if you want to come along and say hello and meet me and see, we've got Leo Galland and Robin Berzin, the Environmental Working Group, Frank Lippmann are going to be there. You know, come down and say hello.
Absolutely, and hopefully I'll find my way down there, and it'll be an opportunity to meet and greet a lot of people and celebrate the launch of this fantastic event. Thanks for joining us. Go to my website at drhoffman.com. The homepage features a link for the Evolution of Medicine Summit, and we'll be talking about this on Intelligent Medicine in the next couple of weeks. Thanks very much for joining us, James Maskell, and all the best, and continued you know, continue your strength and enthusiasm behind this great cause.
Thanks, Doc.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for joining us.